This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, June 29th. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Zoe Thomas. Millions of people have apps on their phones that track menstrual cycles or fertility, and those apps, in turn, collect a trove of sensitive data about users. Now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, striking down the constitutional right to an abortion, some of the companies behind those apps are moving to change how they handle that data, out of concern it could be used to help prosecute people who get abortions. On today's show, WSJ personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen will tell us more about the worries over how that data is collected and used, and what to look for if you want to keep your information private. That's after these headlines. The co-founder and CEO of Pinterest, Ben Silbermann, is stepping down, and a Google executive will be taking over the top job. Bill Ready has been Google's president of commerce since 2020 and previously served top roles at PayPal and Venmo. He joins Pinterest as the company is seeking to boost revenue through areas other than advertising, and as tech stocks are in the midst of their biggest rout in more than a decade. Silbermann will continue on as executive chairman. He told The Wall Street Journal that the decision was driven by what he thought is best for Pinterest. The Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. is reviewing Swedish communication service provider Ericsson's $6.2 billion purchase of the New Jersey-based voice call company Vonage. The committee, known as CFIUS, is a Treasury Department-led panel of federal agencies that determines how foreign deals for U.S. assets could affect national security. Representatives for the Treasury Department didn't immediately return a request for comment, and it couldn't be learned why the committee was reviewing the deal. Ericsson said the acquisition has cleared all other U.S. and foreign regulatory approval requirements, and it hopes to close the deal before the end of July, only a month later than it had previously forecast. Dutch healthcare company Royal Philips says a recalled sleep apnea device has passed key safety tests. Last year, it recalled millions of the DreamStation 1 devices due to concerns that a type of foam used inside the device could possibly release harmful gases or particles, causing irritation or long-term health problems. Now, the company says it hired 5 independent labs to examine the devices, and they passed emissions and particle tests. Still, roughly 5.5 million of their devices will be repaired or replaced. And traditional hedge funds, almost exclusively in the U.S. and Europe, are short selling against Tether, the world's largest stablecoin. That's according to Genesis Global Trading, a large crypto brokerage for professional investors. Its head of institutional sales says these trades are worth hundreds of millions of dollars in notional value. The move comes amid a broad sell-off in the crypto market and the collapse of the algorithmic stablecoin TerraUSD, according to Genesis. Our markets reporter Vicky Huang says short sellers are betting against Tether for 2 main reasons.
Some are looking at this trade as a bet against the broader economy, which is at the risk of entering into a recession as the Federal Reserve has aggressively raised interest rates in order to tame inflation, which is at a 40-year high in the U.S. Other investors are shorting Tether because they're concerned about the quality of the assets backing Tether. Some investors in this camp believe that the majority of the assets backing Tether are commercial paper holdings of heavily indebted Chinese property developers. But Tether has come out and said that these are completely false rumors. The company also said it has been reducing its commercial paper holdings.
All right, coming up, how the Supreme Court's ruling overturning Roe v. Wade is launching changes in apps that track menstrual cycles and fertility. We'll discuss after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Apps that help users monitor their menstrual cycles and fertility collect troves of sensitive data. And the question of what happens to that data has taken on new importance following the Supreme Court's ruling last Friday overturning Roe v. Wade. Legal experts say digital breadcrumbs left by period trackers and fertility apps could be used against people in states where abortion is now illegal. So, is there a way to protect that data? And what can you do if you've already been using those apps? Here with me to answer those questions is WSJ personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let's start with some of the different apps that are out there that help monitor user periods or fertility. How do they work and how popular are they?
These apps that help track your period and also fertility are very, very popular. They're used by millions and millions of people, and not just people with uteruses who have periods. Also partners and parents. A lot of these apps have sharing capabilities that allow you to share details about your cycle with your partner or your parents. And some of the more popular apps that you may have heard of include Flow, Clue, Apple's health app that's built into the iPhone, Fitbit has its own period tracker, Glow, Natural Cycles. All of these apps are used to help women figure out when their next period might be, if they have missed a period, if there's something irregular about their cycle that they can bring up with their doctor in the future, or if they're trying to get pregnant, when they might be ovulating.
So these apps contain a large amount of personal and sensitive user data. How do they get this data and how accurate is it?
So this data is inputted by the user. You tell the app when you're on your period. And some apps also track your temperature, your basal temperature, which can help you monitor when you're ovulating. And it's only as accurate as the data you put in it. So you have to be really diligent about making sure the first day of your menstrual cycle is inputted into the app on the correct day for it to make an accurate prediction. These formulas, these algorithms, have long been practiced by people before phones and apps existed in paper diaries. So they're definitely tried and true formulas. I think one reason why a lot of people use apps now is because it's more convenient to input this data into your app when you're already checking your email or the weather than it is to, you know, maybe track it in a paper diary.
And so once that data is already logged into an app's system, it's not really easy to pull that data back. Why is that?
Generally speaking, and this isn't just true of period tracking apps, once your data is out there in the ether, whether it's in the database of some company or anywhere in the cloud, it's hard to know where it's going. A lot of companies say they don't sell data, but they can certainly share data with third parties. And those parties aren't just advertisers. You know, they can share it with analytics companies that help them determine what kind of mobile devices their users are using. All this to say that once your data is out into the ether, one reason why it's hard to pull back is because it doesn't just live in one place. It often lives in multiple places. And the company that you ask to delete your data can delete your data off of its servers, but not necessarily that of its service partners. So you should always be wary of the type of service you're sharing your data with. And ideally, the app works locally on your phone, and so it doesn't have to share data to the cloud at all.
And what have these companies been doing in response to last Friday's Supreme Court ruling?
Two services we heard from, Flow and Natural Cycles, plan to release an anonymous mode, which will decouple one's data from their personal information. But they didn't provide details on how they would do something like that. And really, the only way to truly decouple one from their information is to make sure that that data is end-to-end encrypted, which means not even the company can read it. And so that data can't be shared with anyone, but especially advertisers and especially law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Have there been instances in the past where this kind of data was used by companies or governments in any way?
Historically, in abortion-related cases, the digital data that's most interesting to prosecutors has been search history and text messages. And so we haven't seen this kind of data used in cases, but there haven't been that many abortion-related cases because Roe v. Wade was just overturned. And so in an era where location data, text messages, browsing history, search history are already used for prosecutions and other kinds of cases, we can imagine that any kind of data can be used in those cases, at least according to the legal experts I spoke to.
Can you walk us through that a bit more? How would you be able to use this period or fertility data to determine if someone has or potentially has had an abortion?
So these apps wouldn't be able to tell you the whole story, but they could tell you that you may be missed a period and when you miss that period. And also if there are location tracking abilities, where you were when you missed that period and thereafter and when you regained your period. And those are things that can tell you something about pregnancy or potential pregnancy. And then on top of that, location data, text messages, search history could create that fuller picture.
So for people who are currently using or want to use these apps, what are some ways they can protect their data? What should they look for?
Ideally, you'd look for an app that's end-to-end encrypted. And so far, Apple's Health app, which is built into the iPhone, is the only app that offers that. For other kinds of apps, you should look at their privacy policies to see if they can or do share and sell your data with third parties. And ideally, the third parties that they are sharing it with is very limited. How they handle government requests and whether they notify users if a law enforcement is requesting their information. And I think generally speaking, you want to stray away from free apps because free apps make their money through advertising and through selling data to marketers. But that's not always the case. Some apps offer a paid subscription, like Glow, which we looked at, do share and sell your data. So just pay close attention to that privacy policy. And of course, there is always the option to track your menstrual cycle on pen and paper, which people have been doing for many, many years before apps existed. And there are charts online to show you how to predict your period and predict your ovulation.
All right. That was our personal tech columnist, Nicole Nguyen. Nicole, thank you again for being here.
Thanks, Julie.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.